Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, my good friend Albert Corrado sits down and shares the story about his sister getting killed at Trader Joe's.
He said, there is an active shooter situation at Nellie's Trader Joe's. We can't get a hold of her. No one knows what's going on. You know, first thing I did once I hung up was called Nellie. And called her and didn't answer. I texted her, hey, are you okay? Hey, what's going on? I figured, you know, at this point, no one knows what's going on. No one knows if it's somebody went in there and shot a bunch of people or, you know, it's kind of hard to follow. I'm following along on Twitter. Got a phone call from Trader Joe's and they were saying, oh, well, you know, we can tell you that your sister's been shot. She said, we don't know if she's made it or not.
Today on the show, Albert Corrado shares the story about his sister, Melly, who was killed at Trader Joe's. Stay close.
Hey, it's Albert Corrado, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Today I'm here with a really interesting guy, Albert Corrado, who I met on Twitter.
Yes, of all places.
Which
yes.
I like that.
Yeah, I think social media, I've met a lot of people, some on through Twitter and then some through, a lot through Instagram.
Yeah.
Like you just find people who are into the same things as you are, and you can someday meet them and become part of their lives. It's very interesting how that works.
I think it is too. I think the whole, I like social media, but then I guess I'm a social person, so maybe that makes sense. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but social media can be so horrible sometimes, you know? It can be, you know, reading whatever this person said or that person, and there's a really dark underbelly to it, but I've, like, some of my close friends I have met through, we just like the same things, and I found them on Instagram, and now we're, like, friends. It's a beautiful thing.
I think it's a beautiful thing, yeah. And I also think that, like, people's personalities shake down in social media. Like, you can't really hide. So the trolls, the crazy people, the people who come at you, they were always jerks.
Yeah, now they have a platform, or many, many platforms. Now they have Facebook and Instagram, and that's the dark part of it, but I think...
Yeah, but if you block, like, I block them, and I pay it no mind. I don't, it just goes right past me. It's like throwing, you know, feathers at me. It doesn't, I don't even think twice. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
right.
I block all the time. Do you block people?
You know, I do. I haven't, fortunately, even with all that's been going on, I haven't really had to, but I've done it before. And it's definitely puts your mind at ease because sometimes if you're looking through a chain of stuff, you just see the most vile people. And
if I get called the C word, which now and then people are crazy, right? I report them.
Okay.
And then awesome. They will get like a 24-hour, like I get the email that says, you know, so-and-so has a 24-hour hold on their account. And I think, ha ha, you know, I don't know. It gives me a little bit of.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes though, like I've learned this through starting different Amazons to get Amazon Prime free for a month is you just start a new email right away and then start a new Twitter. And it's unfortunate that like there's really no way to track that. And I've benefited from it because I'm like, oh, I get Amazon Prime for a month for free and get 2-day shipping and watch TV shows on there. But
It's kind of like when I was growing up in the 70s, 1,000 years ago, we had something called the Columbia House Record Club. Do you remember that?
I used to have those catalogs in my house. Like my mom and dad had them.
And BMG, there was another one. And you would get like 10 albums for a penny.
For a penny, yeah.
That was kind of the way we were like shaking things around in the 70s. And now here we are doing it with like Netflix and Hulu and everybody sharing passwords.
Listen, any system can be gamed and there will always be people who are going to figure it out. Although Spotify, I realize like they keep track of your credit card. So you can change your email, but they'll know that it's your credit card. So they've gotten smart to it, but not every company is. I think.
But Spotify, even if you just have the free account?
Well, because, you know, they'll do like, 3 months for a dollar or free month. And now they're barely doing like a free week. I think they're just tired of giving away free stuff because people found that they can game the system.
Well, listen, speaking of Spotify,
I pay
you know,
for it now, by the way.
So you get ad-free.
Ad-free, I can, and I love making playlists. And
this isn't even an ad for Spotify.
No, I mean, listen, they don't need people to do ads.
And speaking of which, you know, you can listen to Storyworthy on Spotify now, which is nice. You can also listen on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. It's everywhere.
So synergy.
It really is. Yeah. And now there's no excuse not for people to listen because it's on everybody's phone.
Right. Yeah. Now I kind of feel like I've stopped explaining to people what a podcast is and where to get them. I think most people, fortunately, now know where to get them, and sometimes they even come preloaded on your phone.
Yeah, they do, because of course Apple Podcasts comes on an iPhone, and Google Podcasts automatically comes on an Android. And actually, in a way, I think the statistic is something like 74% of Americans have never even listened to a podcast. So it's still like the future is still really bright. Really?
Well, but it's funny because I read a thing that said 85% of American people have podcasts. So that's kind of a strange thing. At one point, I was hosting
Albert,
two podcasts.
You are so funny.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I'm really excited to hear your story today. And, you know, the title of the story, My Sister Was Killed at Trader Joe's, is it's shocking. It's devastating. And, you know, I live two blocks from that Trader Joe's. I could practically see it from my window.
Yeah.
And I've been shopping there for 20 years. And I actually remember your sister because I would get quarters from her.
Yeah, she was always at that manager, the bridge, they call it. Yeah, so that's where they keep all the quarters and stuff.
And that's where she would give, and I would give the $10, and she'd give me the quarters, and I remember her smiling face. And anyway, I'm really appreciative that you're here to tell this story. But before Albert comes on, you guys, I did want to remind you to head over to storyworthypodcast.com. If you would do that, that'd be great. Because, you know, stuff is going on, and, you know, you can join my mailing list, you know, stuff like that, you guys. So help me out. Go over to storyworthypodcast.com, and then, of course, tell a friend about the show. That always helps. Okay, so listen, guys. Albert Corrado is here right now. He is a career barista.
Yes.
Which is so interesting, because there just seems to be, it's like a bartender now.
Yeah, I think it's here to stay.
Yeah,
coffee,
oh,
especially
sure.
Fancy specialty coffee. We took it from being a luxury to now a necessity, right? Everybody says, oh, I need my coffee. I need this. And now people are becoming more discerning as far as, like, you know, it's cool to drink Dunkin' and Starbucks, but I think people want to learn a little bit more about coffee because it's about as complicated and complex as wine
and weed.
Beer. And weed, yeah. See,
frankly,
weed,
yeah.
I'm not really in, you know, I every time I go to a dispensary with a friend, it's like all these different kinds,
amazing.
And yeah, it's kind of incredible.
Well, I love the whole coffee scene just because it's an option rather than a bar all the time.
Right, yeah. I mean, well, if you're a regular at a coffee shop, it's great. Like, oh, there's Christine, you know, she gets her almond milk cappuccino or whatever. But if you're a regular at a bar, people kind of think you have a problem, you know. It's true. It's just like, oh, there's that guy.
No, that's really funny. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah, because if you're at a coffee shop with your laptop, well, clearly you're productive.
Right. Exactly. You know? Yeah. Whereas, you can have five cups of coffee. No one cares. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas if you're at the end of the bar, you know, on your fifth draft, no good. You are also, like I mentioned, you grew up here in Los Angeles.
I did, yeah.
And you have a podcast. It's a movie podcast,
yes,
right?
Yes. It's called Movies Not Films. I've been doing it with my friend Angel Martinez for like 3 years. He's my best friend and roommate. We just kind of, you know, we give movies a fair shake and try to not be pretentious about it, which is Movies Not Films. The title is kind of my way of just saying, like, we love movies and we love all that comes with it, but we're not the kind of people who are going to sit there and say, oh, well, this movie is not good because it's an action movie or a superhero movie. We take it all as entertainment. And
and
I think movies will give you whatever you're looking for.
So what does Movies Not Films mean, though? What does that mean?
So, I mean, for me, it's, you know, people talk about, like, oh, the new film and the new whatever film.
Oh, like in a pretentious way.
In a pretentious way to kind of, you know, and again, I know about movies. I've been watching them my whole life. My dad was a movie buff. He would never call himself that, but he kind of just gave me movies and said, oh, here, you might like this. And it informed me to, you know, in so many ways. And so for me, I just hear people that went to like film school and are really into it. And that's a great thing to be into, but be very pretentious and say, oh, well, I only watch, you know, these kinds of movies. And honestly, my movie of 2015 was like Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah.
And is it like the most compelling drama that's going to teach you about your own humanity? No, but it was a really well done movie. And then, you know, the year after was Moonlight. And so I just think movies will whatever you are looking to get from movies, they will give to you. I grew up, I'm a kid from the San Fernando Valley.
Yeah, so
you know,
you
I know where I'm from. I grew up going to the plant movie theaters in Panorama City. You know, I went to Burbank a lot. So I love movies, and I can't stand people who are too, I mean, I take it seriously, of course, because I love it.
It sounds like it's like in your blood.
It's in my blood, like, because my dad was, you know, he's like, oh, here's Toy Story, but here's also, you know, the original Dawn of the Dead. And I kind of, my little brain was
putting it together.
It kind of melted and be like, what? Wait, Toy Story is a cool thing, but there's this zombie movie that like someone's guts are getting ripped out.
Yeah, also in Los Angeles, everything is so tangible because you know people that work in the movies and you know where things are shot and you drive by familiar stages. And so it's more realistic to. I don't know. Like growing up, to me, it was all fantasy because I grew up in Pittsburgh.
Oh, you did? Okay.
So I didn't. There was nothing about the movies. I didn't understand any of it. But if you grew up here, then you have more of a your fingers on the pulse.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, the thing about growing up here and working here as well. My first job ever was at the Coffee Bean. There's one in one of the ones in the Valley, and then I worked at Starbucks for a few years, and like you would just see people, like famous people, and it's such a trip that like, oh, there's
Sharon Stone, who whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, even recently, I was working at a shop on Fairfax, and the people who came in there were like the top A-list, and you're just supposed to act like kind of normal, but it's just a weird byproduct of living here. Is that Seth Rogen needs to get us coffee, and then Kanye also needs to get a coffee, and you know,
I love
that's just.
It. Yeah, I love that
it's
about
kind of
LA.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Hey, you guys can follow Albert over on Twitter at Digital Urn. So it's DigitalUrn at yes. Digital Urn. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Albert Corrado.
All right, so July 21st was like any other day that I had ever lived. Woke up, went to work. I was actually working at two separate cafes trying to save money, and woke up to go to one. Worked about 6 hours. Went home to take a nap. Took a shower, went to my other job, and Minneapolis is about 2 hours ahead of LA in time. So around, I'd say about 5:30 or so, maybe 5:45, I get a call from my dad. And, I moved out there and I'd been there for about 4 months. So he called me a couple times a week. I think he was, because I had moved away before to San Francisco, but it's 5 hours away. It's still the same state. I think he was a little... he was missing me a lot because I'm 2,000 miles away, halfway across the country. And so he would call me two times a week. So I figured, I'll let it go to voicemail because I'm at work. I'll call him, later tonight or tomorrow. And then immediately I got a call from my brother. And my brother is, he lives in Jersey. And, he calls me occasionally, but I wasn't really sure. I figured, something is up. Like, why would they call me one right after the other? Like, this doesn't happen. So clearly something's up. So I went outside. And he said, I said, hey, what's up? And he said, there is an active shooter situation at Melly's Trader Joe's. We can't get a hold of her. No one knows what's going on. And I just freaked. And I said, oh, no. And he told me, he's my older brother. He's 10 years older than me. And he told me, it's okay. It's going to be fine. Just don't worry about it. I thought, you need to know because we don't know what's going on. And so I kind of sat there in my coffee shop, just kind of at a loss for words. And first thing I did once I hung up was called Melly, and called her and didn't answer. I texted her, hey, are you okay? Hey, what's going on? I figured, at this point, no one knows what's going on. No one knows if it's somebody went in there and shot a bunch of people or, it's kind of hard to follow. I'm following along on Twitter because people are starting to freak out. And my boss kind of tells me, just go home, just go. And I said, okay, I didn't know what to do. I was playing phone tag with my dad and my brother and my sister's two roommates who are, we had a little like family group. Like my sister's best friend is engaged to my best friend. And we're like, so then my sister was living with them at the time. So they were all there in LA. They were back here trying to figure out what the hell was going on. At this point, there's barricades and there's the church, the Silver Lake Community Church is now the meeting center. And, I'm feeling completely helpless because I'm 2,000 miles away. I'm trying to figure out what to do, and we still don't know what happened with Melly. And as time goes on, I remember driving home, and I stopped maybe like 6 or 7 blocks from my house. And I figured, I know that Twitter can be kind of a good resource because it can help people out in an emergency. It can connect people. And again, I know from firsthand experience, I've met people on Twitter that live far away, but I can talk to at a moment's notice. And so I figured I'm gonna tweet something out because at that point they were saying, oh, well, a bunch of people were able to get out. And, now this guy's taking hostages. And so I figured, okay, well, if Melly was able to get out, maybe she didn't have her phone on her. I thought maybe she can't answer because this guy's taking them hostage. Again, nothing is really known. At that point, no one knew what the hell was going on except that this guy was in there with hostages, and 30 or 40 people escaped. So I pulled over and I tweeted out, you know, my sister is a manager at Trader Joe's, and I can't get a hold of her. And I'm hoping that if somebody sees this, they can tell her that I'm looking for her. I'm scared for my sister. And then I followed it up right away with my sister's name is Melida Corrado, just in case. You know, I figured, okay, well, she might be with somebody at this reunification center that they're talking about, or the Silver Lake Church, and somebody's going to see it and say, oh, your brother's looking for you. And she'll call me, and this whole thing will blow over. And, you know, my phone is blowing up with retweets, and it was great because people were like, oh, we're so sorry to hear. We hope you find her. And as time keeps going, it becomes more surreal that we don't know what the hell is going on. And I'm calling my dad, and he doesn't know what's going on. And I'm calling my sister's roommates, Angel and Rocio, and they don't know what's going on. And it's just madness. No one knows what the hell is going on. And this kind of continues for like another hour or so. And then finally, I start to get I got a phone call from Trader Joe's, and they were saying, oh, well, you know, we can tell you that your sister's been shot. We don't know the real details about it. She said, we don't know if she's made it or not. And that kind of struck this fear into my heart that like, oh, this could go another way. This could turn into me not having a sister anymore. And it like filled my heart with this like intense like fear. And I started to feel nauseous. And she said, but you know, we'll keep in touch with you. Just, you know, keep your phone on and we'll let you know if anything happens. And so, you know, again, this is all phone tag. And then my phone is blowing up because people are saying, oh, well, you know, they're trying to, give me a helping hand. Oh, the reunification center is here and we hope you find your sister. And I felt, you know, again, very helpless, but kind of, you know, okay, well, people are keeping an eye out. But I'm thinking, well, at this point, you know, it's been an hour and a half since I tweeted, like somebody must have seen her, or somebody must know where she is. And I figured, well, maybe she's in the hospital. You know, she didn't tell me anything except she's been shot. And so finally I call my brother, and he's, you know, we're still holding out hope and say, okay, well, we're calling every single hospital we can. And my dad is too. And he's, you know, I can hear it in his voice that as time goes on, he's becoming less and less confident that Melly has made it. Cause now we know the fact that she was shot. And so finally I call my roommate, or my sister's roommate, Angel, who's my best friend. And I say, hey man, like, I don't know what's going on. I got this call from Trader Joe's saying she was shot, but they think she's okay. And then he just said, Albert, I'm sorry, she's dead. And, you know, I hung up the phone, and I was at this point had driven up, and I was outside of my house waiting to hear back word. And, I just kind of sat on the sidewalk and just kind of tried to figure out what that meant. You know, my sister and I were very, very, very close. And so I just thought, how is this happening? You know, because earlier in the day I was thinking, you know, as I was watching this unfold on Twitter, I kind of had this thought that a lot of people have, like, well, that doesn't happen to me, right? This is what happens to people on the news. You know, it's something you hear about on the news and you say, oh, that's horrible. And then you just kind of move on. And then I was like, oh, I guess I'm the guy that everyone's happy they're not right now. And when all that happened, no one knew who this person that they knew that they were reporting that a person had died, and they didn't know who it was. And at this point, so many people were, hey, we heard somebody died. Like, I hope your sister's okay. I mean, people I've never met, thousands of people on Twitter replying. And I just remember feeling like I have to tell people. People are going to know at some point. And I just found this out. So maybe about half an hour after I got that first call, I finally was able to kind of compose myself. And I just said, you know, I'm sad to say she didn't make it, you know. And at that point, I had called a few people, including my roommates, for a ride to the airport, because I just said, you know, I was going to go back to L.A. Even if she had been shot and survived, I figured my sister's going to need me. My family's going to need me. And so I had gone to the airport, and I couldn't find a flight home. And Minneapolis airport isn't LAX. It's not a place that is open at all hours of the night. So I couldn't get home. And I just remember calling my dad, and I said, Dad, I can't come home right now. Like, I have to wait till, you know, 6 a.m. for the first flight out. He said, that's, you know, and through tears, and I, you know, never really heard my dad cry like that. He said, just come home. And I just, well, we'll never forget him saying that, just come home. Like, we need you right now. And we all need to be together. And so I got picked up by my roommate, and he was the first person that I had told what had happened. And now I just seen him earlier in the day. So he's like, why are you at the airport? I said, I'll explain to you later. And so he picked me up. He started crying with me, and I was just trying to make sense of it. And I remember I had bought this, cheap rum the night before for a friend's housewarming party. And I forgot it because I brought beer and I forgot to bring the rum. And I just remember I got home and I poured myself a glass and just like tried to make sense of what the hell was going on. And that, and as every moment, every minute went by, and I kept getting calls from my family. I have family in El Salvador and Australia. I had people, friends, you know, I worked at Trader Joe's with Melly for a year and a half at Toluca Lake. And she had been transferred maybe 8 months before to Silver Lake when she got promoted to manager. And so I knew a lot of people that worked with her, and they were my friends too. And so everyone's calling me, and we're all trying to figure out how the hell this happened. And so for the rest of the night, I remember just sitting there and occasionally looking at my phone and seeing people were so sorry. And I remember getting the first call from CNN. I remember it was the first news organization that reached out to me. Hey, you know, we're so sorry about your sister, but you know, do you want to talk about her? I said, not really. I said, all you need to know is that she was the person I love the most in the world. She was my, you know, our mom died when I was 14 and Melly was 11. And she helped me get through that, and I helped her. And we became, you know, we were always going to be close because we were close in age. And I, you know, we enjoyed each other, and I was a classic big brother, and I would tease her and all that. But because we went through that, we remained so close, even in adulthood. Even when I moved away, she always was supportive, and we talked all the time. And I had talked to her a few days before and texted her with her the night before. So I just told him, I said, I'm not ready to go on a whole thing, but I need the world to know that she was everything to me. She was my baby sister. My earliest memory is of my parents bringing her home. And I was only 2 and a half, you know, and I remember it so vividly. And now to be sitting on a sidewalk in Minneapolis, 2,000 miles away from my dad, and thinking that his daughter is now dead. You know, I sat in my room and just kind of tried to prepare myself for what could possibly come next. Now, you know, it's hard enough hearing it, but now seeing it and now being around my dad and all these people and not knowing the impact it was going to have on the city of LA and all that. But I just remember asking the person on CNN, well, how did you get my number? They said, well, oh, one of our assistants found it online. And then the whole night I'm sitting there trying to come to terms with what just happened. And I'm getting called by every major news organization. And it's, you know, it kind of reminded me of that movie Bowling for Columbine. And they have the calls that the news organizations are making to parents of kids who've been killed and people who go to Columbine trying to get a scoop. And I just felt like my sister literally is just dead. You know, like she just died. We just found this out. Like, I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to sit there in front of the world and say more than what is in my heart right now is that I loved her more than anything in this world. And, you know, at that point I was thinking, how the hell am I going to get through this life without her? You know, how? Like, because we had all these plans. We had, you know, oh, well, you know, we were always going to keep in touch. And no matter where we lived, our kids were gonna know each other. We didn't have children, but we always thought, oh, well, that'd be cool. They're going to be close like we are, because we were so close. And one of the things that kind of brought me a little bit of comfort was, you know, that night, a lot of people just said, yeah, you were the first person I thought about when I heard, because they knew how close we were. You know, they had seen us be so close and saw how much we cared about each other. Even if we were bickering like siblings do, you know, we cared about each other in such a deep way, because we saw each other transform in front of each other's eyes because of our mom's death. And Melly became who she was, this strong, outspoken woman who really didn't take shit from anybody. Sorry, I don't know if I can curse. And I became who I was because of that. And she was at my side in every single moment. In when my mom got sick, to her doing chemo, to her coming to hospice, and then to her being dead, she was there. And then every moment after that, every moment of grieving, every time we're trying to figure something out, why the hell do we feel this way? And so to now have her gone and sitting on my bed in Minneapolis, regretting that I had moved away, that I didn't get to spend her last birthday with her, And, you know, and of course, those thoughts leave because, well, no one could have known that this was going to happen. But at the time, I just felt so just helpless and like I should have been there. I should have done something. But there was nothing any of us could have done. And, you know, I flew home the next morning and I got here about 9 a.m. and I was picked up by my sister's roommates. And, you know, we didn't really talk because we were just in shock. And took us about an hour to get to where my dad was. He was at my uncle's house in Covina. And at that point, I didn't really know what was going to happen, if I was going to go back to Minneapolis. Or I knew I'd be here about 2 weeks. And then I'd figure something out, maybe go back there and see what was what. And, you know, but as soon as I saw him, I just knew. I was like, I can't leave. I can't even go back to get my stuff. I had to get all my stuff shipped back to me. Because I was just, I saw the look, this look in his eyes, and he saw it in mine, that like, this is nothing short of full-scale devastation. You know, I've never seen my dad look that way. And he's a strong, loud, charismatic dude who was always had something to say about something. And to see him rendered speechless at the thought of his daughter dying. And, you know, and I've kind of learned over my 30 years of life that like you only ever really share a handful of honest moments with anybody. Truly, truly honest. When there's nothing, there's no artifice. And one of them was with my mom, and we looked at each other, and I knew that she wasn't gonna make it, and she knew it too. And then she told me, you know, take care of Melly. And when I looked at my dad, that was another one of those honest moments of like, we don't know what to do. We don't know. There is no playbook for this. There is no way to get through this without losing a bit of ourselves. And, you know, since that day, we've just been grieving and trying to figure it out. But I'll never, ever forget him saying, just come home. Because it was, we knew that whatever the road held for us was going to be something that is going to shape us in ways that we can't even imagine right now. And, you know, I just went back to Minneapolis recently for the first time since it all happened. And I remember I just stood at the spot where I got the call that Melly died. And I just felt, you know, an odd sense of comfort, but also just like, this isn't my life anymore. You know, that life that I was living there, trying to find a new start, ended when I got that call. And it was my worst fear realized, because once you lose someone, you know, kind of important, like, you know, when I lost my mom, you sort of live with this constant fear that you're going to lose people. And I've had friends since my mom. I had a couple of friends commit suicide. I had a girl that I was dating die of a brain aneurysm. And you live with this constant fear. And Melly and I always live with this really constant fear that, oh, what if, you know, we got to make sure dad is okay. But I never thought for a moment that it was going to be Melly was the one that we would have to worry about. And I, you know, and the morning I got there, we went to the morgue and we had to identify the body. And I had to do that because I knew that the last time I saw her alive was in March, and I just saw her go into her room and close the door. And I said, I need to see, you know, not like I'm some kid, I don't know that she is actually dead, but I needed to see it with my own eyes. And, you know, you see someone as they never were. And I saw her come home wrapped up in a blanket when she was, you know, 2 days old. And then to have to look through a mirror and see her body there is, it's going to haunt me for the rest of my life. And I look at my dad every day and I see him struggle with it, because she was my sister, she was my world, but I don't know the feeling of raising a child and hoping you did your best and that they become their own person and they have their own life, and then to have it stop like that. I don't know that. And it brings me a lot of pain to know that my dad has to live with that, has to live with the fear of every parent of losing a daughter. And my brother, you know, he has a daughter, my 12-year-old niece, and I love her so much, and I see how much he loves her, and I can see how affected he is about even the thought of losing her, and knowing that my dad has to go through that right now is the hardest thing in the world. Because you know, I had 15 years of grieving for my mom to prepare for this. Unfortunately, that's what it ended up being, was preparation for this horrible thing. But my dad, there's nothing that can prepare you for that.
Listen, I am so glad you are here for your dad now, and I'm so glad you live in Los Angeles, Albert. You know, it's really good that you came home. You guys really need each other.
Yeah, I knew. I guess I maybe always knew in the back of my head, but I just that moment I just said nope, I can't. And right now I'm feeling like I can't ever live away from home again. Yeah. I always have to have my dad by my side, and we've spent pretty much every day together for the last 4 months.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That's good. You know, he's your friend.
Yeah, he's my friend. I mean, you know, we're definitely two yangs is what I'll say. You know, we're very similar and very like
two peas in a pod.
You know, and he's just a certain way and I'm a certain way, and there's definitely times where we clash, where, you know, we're on a long drive and things get to us, but then I look at him and I realize like, there's no one in the world I'd rather be with than him.
Yeah, that's love.
You know, and going back to Minneapolis, while, you know, I feel it's a bummer that I got my time there was cut short, it's like I don't really care that much because I'd rather be where I'm needed.
Of course. You know, when you go back to that spot in Minneapolis, that's straight on PTSD. You know, when you see a spot like that, that brings back all those emotions and feelings. Hey, listen, are you a public speaker or have you been in the past?
No, I mean, I've
You speak so clearly so well. You're very articulate and you create these, I mean, the story is obviously very fresh and very real to you, but you're able to add so many nuances that, you know, I mean, I was right there with you.
I appreciate that. I mean, I will say I did a couple plays in high school.
Interesting. So,
yeah. I mean, I've hosted a podcast for a few years, so maybe it's that, but I don't know. I mean, my dad was the same way. Melly was kind of the same way. We always know how to talk, so.
Yeah.
I mean, I talk a lot, so.
When you heard that she was shot, did you assume that it was from the assailant, the guy that was running from the police?
Yeah, yeah. You know, we didn't, again, nothing was known. At that point, nothing was known, and then it came to light that wasn't the case, that you know, the guy was running into the store and the police shot at him and then she got caught in the crossfire. But yeah, initially I thought, yeah, it was some guy who came in and started shooting people because that's what happens in America now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've had, what, on like Monday there was, what, three in across
the
nation?
Yeah, when you hear the word an active shooter, you think that there's somebody with a gun who's shooting the people around them.
Yeah, I mean, and the fact that
this was the case, that this guy had been escaping the police. He was in a car. So what was going on? He had already killed his...
He shot his grandmother, they say, about seven times. She survived.
She survived. She survived.
I know that's another one of those, like, how does the universe work this way?
How did she survive? Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, so he was, and they chased him, and his tire blew outside of Trader Joe's. He hit a light pole, and he ran into the store, and they shot at him.
So wait, did their bullet shoot his tire? Is that what?
I don't know how it got to be that way. There's a video that I've seen a few times of the body cams. I don't actually know how the tire crashed into that pole,
which is right at Trader Joe's, yeah, where people stand out and, you know, collect signatures or money for different organizations. Right there,
yeah.
He crashes into that pole. He jumps out of the car and he runs into the store.
Yeah.
Now, was he waving a gun or did he have a weapon pulled?
He had a weapon. As far as I can tell, he wasn't. He wasn't shooting, but he had it on him. But yeah, he was running into the store and they shot at him and shot at him a few times, and one of them hit Melly.
It just seems so incredulous that they're shooting into a crowded store.
Right. Well, I mean, that's definitely one of those things that I think a lot of people have picked up on, is that it doesn't seem like something that should be done in any instance, you know.
Of course not.
Especially in a Trader Joe's, which is, you know, a very busy.
Very busy.
Very busy place.
That particular Trader Joe's is, as I understand, the second busiest in the entire country. Yeah. The first being the one in Times Square.
Right.
And so this Trader Joe's literally has like 50,000 people going in and out of its doors every week.
And also, you know, I'm working. People bring their children there.
Oh, they're small children. My daughter grew up at Trader Joe's.
Right. I remember weirdly enough going, because my parents were divorced and I grew up mostly in the Valley, but my dad usually lived around here. So we've been going to that Trader Joe's for more than 20 years as well.
Yeah.
So to know, to think that this place that like we loved going to would play such a major role in our lives is kind of insane.
So you worked at the Trader Joe's in Toluca Lake with Melly.
I did for a year and a half.
And did you like that?
I thought it was okay. I mean, I had a, I ended up getting a coffee job maybe halfway in between that.
Yeah.
That I liked a lot more. So I think my last few months at Trader Joe's were pretty like, I didn't like it because I was like, oh, my coffee gig pays better and I get to listen to cool music and I don't have to, you know, you still deal with like a certain kind of customer, but Trader Joe's, I'll say that their customer service is obsessive.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't really dig that, you know? So
yeah,
I would, yeah. So I would do a double and work my coffee shop job in the morning and be like, oh, it's so fun and awesome. And I saw Kanye West and all that. And then, you know.
Yeah, I applied for Trader Joe's twice, by the way. And
really?
Neither time. I didn't get chosen either time. I didn't even get an interview. I didn't get called.
When was this?
Like probably 5 years ago, maybe 6 years
ago.
Yeah.
You have, but you I mean, listen, your personality is like, would fit.
Yeah,
so no, well there. You're so bubbly and fun. And
no, they don't. I don't know what it takes. But I guess around here, it's also like, I don't know, man. Some really, you have to give a headshot to get a job or something.
I've applied to restaurants and bartending gigs. They're like, yeah, a headshot and some like something about yourself. I'm like, I'm just trying to like serve food. I don't know why that.
We need your social media followings.
Well, I mean, you know, it's one of the odd sort of byproducts of all this is social media having played such a big part in dealing with Melly and getting the word out and all that. It's such a, I don't know. It's very strange now.
That tweet that you tweeted out and you said you tweeted it out 30 minutes after you got the news, that was the tweet that broke my heart. And that's when I first met you, as it were. And you wrote, you know, my world is over. And, you know, and I remember, I think, everybody, millions of people's hearts were just ripped out.
Yeah.
Because it was so honest and so truthful. And now that I've learned about what you guys shared in terms of the loss, and you know, she was only 11, my daughter's 11, you know, and the fact that you bonded with her that way, you were so lucky to have that sort of relationship.
Yeah, it was the, you know, it was one of the things I was proudest of in my life is the relationship that we shared and knowing that no matter who was talking to me and who had ever met us, even for the tiniest bit of time, knew how much we cared about each other. I went on a Tinder date the night before, and this girl found out about it, and she's like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I could tell how much your sister meant to you." And I'd only, you know, the date lasted like 2 or 3 hours. Like, we were such a giant part of each other's lives.
I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, and you know, and that's why it's such a heartbreaking thing to try to think about. Because I remember we were in that room that you have the viewings in, right?
Yeah.
Where the body, and it was the morning of the burial. So it was the last time we were going to see Melly's body. The last of, you know, we already had the memorial service the day before. A lot of people showed up, but now we're left with this final step. And I remember sitting there with my brother and we're like losing our minds. And this is the last time we're going to see Melly. They're saying, oh, we're rounding up the cars. We're going to put her in the hearse. Like it's time to go. And I just remember sitting there with my brother and we looked at each other and my uncle came over and my uncle has lost two kids. He lost two kids within 2 years of each other. They were in their 20s. So he, you know, this is for him, this is where his expertise lies now, you know? And so I just remember him thinking like, him saying, you know, he says, I know you think this is the end, but it's not. And I'm still right now, I'm like, it feels like it. I don't know what comes after this.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's like heartbreak times 1,000 when it's a death, because it's so final. So getting through the days, do you sometimes just have to like count to 10 and just count to 10 over and over, like keep breathing? How do we go on?
I mean, for me right now, what helps is being with my dad. That's good. And sometimes, you know, we talk a lot and other days we don't. And that's okay. I think we're both okay with whatever the other person needs. And I was having a bit of separation anxiety when I went to Minneapolis. I was gone for like 6 days and I just felt this, you know, but at the same time, I was like, well, we both need this.
Yeah.
We both need this thing because we're always with each other and it's wonderful. But again, we're just people. And so for us, you know, I go to the gym a few times a week. That helps. that's 2 hours where I don't have to think about it. You know, I feel good about it.
I find exercise is really good for
heartbreak
and sadness. For me, it's a good way to, sometimes I'll just go up into the park and just start running up a hill, you know, because at least then I feel something.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what it, you know, the first time I was able to work out after all, I think everything happened was maybe like a week and a half. And I just remember feeling like, oh, okay, like not every single moment's going to be excruciatingly painful.
Listen, you can be such an inspiration, Albert, to other people going through trauma. And, you know, actually, I saw that you went over to Thousand Oaks after that shooting.
We did.
And that was a very kind thing to do.
Well, you know, I was talking to my dad, and like, there are not a lot of people in the world who understand what we're going through and then what they're going through. And you know, people can try to imagine and sympathize and all that, but I think the big thing that kind of brings us down and keeps us like kind of sad is how life has to go on. Life has to go on. Unfortunately, people have to go back to work, and the world keeps moving with or without Melly, with or without the 13 people in Thousand Oaks or the 11 people in Pittsburgh. And that is horrible because, you know, it leaves us with the wreckage. While, you know, the first 2 weeks, everyone is there. Everyone's reaching out and pouring out love and bringing you food, and it's wonderful. But then things kind of have to go back to the way they were for them, and that's fine. No judgment on that, but then, you know, it leaves us. And those families in Thousand Oaks and Pittsburgh and all these other places are going to be left dealing with these emotions for years, and it's going to shape them. And unfortunately, it's not all going to be positive.
Okay, listen, do you think you might, take these experiences then and do some public speaking and travel a bit?
Yeah.
Because you really are so articulate, and the story is so compelling and so sad.
Well, I mean, yeah, maybe. But right now it's still very raw, and
it's only been 4 months.
Well,
nothing.
You know, had you talked to me, you know, 3 weeks before, 3 weeks after it happened, I don't think I would have.
You couldn't, right? You wouldn't have
pulled
the
all this. But again, being with it every single day and going through it, and again, 15 years of learning how to deal with and articulate my feelings about my mom, and have it all morph into these different things is, I mean, again, it's now I'm like, okay, I'm hitting the beats, as it were, of the grief, and okay, well, in 8 months I might be here, and the first year is such a crazy time, and you know, so I came on the show and hope to talk to people, because it's like these things are horrible and they can really, really bring you down, and there could be ways I could be coping with this that aren't healthy, and I'm not doing that. I'm going to therapy for the first time
you
in my life.
Good. You're so strong.
Thank
you.
Yeah.
Really handsome.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to have some sense of normalcy, whatever that might be.
So listen, is your family going to sue the LAPD?
I think, you know what? I think it's okay to say by the time this comes out, we'll have filed the lawsuit.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've been prepping it. Takes a lot of time, a lot of effort.
I can't even imagine.
A lot of meetings, a lot of 9-hour meetings in attorney's offices, a lot of, you know, there's a weird amount of mundane things that have to be done when someone dies, but also when you're going to file this stuff. It's like, it's just very, very, like,
well, they make
draining.
It that way so that you don't go through with it, so that back off.
But we're ready.
You have to.
Yeah, but we're ready. You know, our lawyers say, you know, if we take this all the way, this could take 2 years. I'm like, fine. That's the only downside is that the grieving isn't I'm not fully able to do it because there's this other fight coming.
Yeah.
There's this thing, and we're going to keep having to hear about Melly's last moments. We're keep hearing about the shooting, where she was shot. So I'm trying to prepare myself for that, but we're ready and we're going to do it. And from the moment it happened and the moment we found out that it was the police that did it, we knew that we had no other option. And you know what? The good thing about, and what I have loved about talking to people and people reaching out, is I think most people support us. Most people support that
this
should not have happened, and that you just don't know what they did.
It could happen to anybody.
And you know what?
I'm in and out of that Trader Joe's. I was there that morning.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm there all the time.
Till the end of time, that Trader Joe's will always be where Melly was killed.
Yeah.
No matter what they do, no matter what it is, even if they change the businesses and make it into something, that's always going to, and for me, that's always going to be that, like the spot in Minneapolis, that spot is going to be something to the Corrado family. And to many, many, many thousands of people who, when Melly died, saw, you know, thought about their own children, thought about themselves being at work. You know, you're at work. You don't expect that to happen. You're doing your thing.
It's just like remembering where you were on 9/11.
Right.
Remembering where all those moments in our lives, it's just ingrained. And then everything changes.
Yeah, and you know, the LAPD loves to say, you know, well, we more people could have died, but one did. And for
you
me, and
it
was, and it's the most tragic, catastrophic thing that's ever happened to me. And I'm happy more people didn't die. Of course, you know, I'm happy for everyone who said that they usually go there or that they were just there 10 minutes, and that's great. But I'm left with Melly, and I'm left with having to go to her grave, which I'm going to do after this.
She's so lucky you're her brother.
Well, you know, I'm. Thank you, and I, you know, me and my dad and my brother, we're ready to take this and do whatever, and if, you know, whoever the hell we are after all this happens, we don't know. But
listen, you have a lot of support, man. This whole city is behind your family.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, we're gonna need a lot of support as time goes on, and you know, my responsibility for the rest of my life is going to be to Melly and to making sure that she's remembered the way that we want her to be remembered.
You are going to be an advocate. Going to be an advocate for victims' rights. Really, you,
That's what we want to do. And you know, once
you're the one,
the dust settles, we'll you know, move along with that. But for now, you know, Melly is not here, and it tears me apart every day. And we'll see who I am in a few years. But for now, like I have a very clearly defined goal is to take on the LAPD, and
right,
that's
on
what we're gonna have to do.
Right on, man. You got my support.
Thank you very much.
All right, you guys, I gotta wrap it up. Head over to Twitter and follow Albert at Digital Earn and tell him that you enjoyed his story. Give him your support. Digital Earn, DigitalEurn, and then follow me over there as well at Storyworthy. And one more time, on behalf of the very talented Albert Corrado, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you as well.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it a Storyworthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.